Good morning, everyone. The Senate E-12 Budget Division will come to order. It is Thursday, April 15, 2015. It's 8:33 a.m. We're in room 107 of the State Capitol. Today we have before us Senate File 811. Yesterday we had the walkthrough of the bill. We have several amendments, 25 and growing, which we'll entertain as offers may, offers that will be your call as to when they might be introduced or if in fact they are. I have the delete all amendment, which was posted 2 days ago and which we had the walkthrough for, and that is the A1 amendment. Members, we have had enough for a quorum show up. As you know, Finance Committee is meeting right now as well, but and there's other functions that are going on, but I want you to know that if anyone wants to be here for a particular vote, just let us know, and we'll do our best to provide a reasonable amount of time, assuming that you're in the Capitol. And we'll allow that time. So for people on finance, which includes myself, we may have to go down there sometimes just to vote on matters. So I'll turn the gavel to Vice Chair Johnson.
Okay, Senator Wigger.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment to Senate File 811. Again, this is a delete all. And it reflects what we had yesterday in the walkthrough that staff went through in the various articles. And then after we adopt this, presumably, then I'll have an author's amendment, which by and large reflects technical amendments. And if anyone wants to call that out later and reconsider a particular provision, I'm fine with that, but it's to move this along. So on the A1 amendment, Madam Chair.
Yes, members, we have the A1 amendment from Senator Wigger. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have the A11 amendment. I'll ask nonpartisan staff to explain it.
Does everyone have the A11 amendment?
Yes. And members, one thing, too, for those of you that would like to share any amendments just for distribution, you can tell our staff to distribute those, and it'll help expedite things later as we go through items. So the A11 should be at your table, and we'll ask Mr. Arneson and others to explain as needed.
Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair and members, the A11 amendment is a technical amendment intended to address some of the omissions that were mentioned by the chair yesterday. I'll go through page and line on the amendment and just explain what each new section of language does and be glad to answer questions if necessary. So I'm working on the document marked A11. On page 1 of that document, lines 4 through 15, makes a conforming change to the definition of extended support revenue in the definition of revenue for the Crosswind School. Lines 16 through 29 are kind of standard language that often is in an E-12 omnibus bill, and it directs the commissioner to adjust the tax rate and equalizing factors if during the same session, in a subsequent tax bill, the tax committee makes changes to the underlying composition of the underlying tax base. Page 1, line 31 to page 2, line 24, inserts the language that lifts the cap, the equalization cap for the BIE schools. That has been carried in the spreadsheet, and the chair mentioned yesterday that it was omitted in error from the bill text. Page 2, line 27, and page 2, line 30 basically move the appropriation for the education partnership pilots from a standalone section to the existing appropriations section in the bill. It's more just a matter of kind of good bill drafting form to move it there. Page 2, line 28 sets the forecast base for early childhood literacy programs. That was omitted in error from the original bill text. Page 3, lines 11 to 14, deletes unnecessary language, and I believe this is all related to that Senator Rest provision on the acceleration of special ed aid. So this language is not necessary under the revised bill text, and it's deleted here. Page 3, line 16 to page 4, line 23, inserts language related to the regional library aid applications. That was discussed by the chair in committee yesterday, and it's inserted now in the bill text here in this amendment. Page 4, lines 24 to 35, makes changes to the school readiness proposal. It clarifies that the four-year-old program may be optionally offered by a district. It lowers the number of annual and summer hours required. So the summer hours required under this amendment would be 50. The total annual hours required with the amendment would be 500. It clarifies that if a district chooses not to offer the four-year-old program, the district's aid is reduced by 80%. And that's roughly, that 80% is roughly equal to the new money in this bill. So if a district chose not to offer that program, they would still generate school readiness aid, but not the new increment provided for in this bill. Page 5, lines 1 through 18, inserts language mistakenly omitted from the original bill text. This provision had been carried in the spreadsheet, and it relates to Board of Teaching rulemaking authority for certificates of advanced professional study. And that is the A11 amendment.
Are there any questions, members? If not, all those in favor of adoption of A11 amendment, say aye, please.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries.
And, Madam Chair, if I could suggest, because we have members in other committees, if there's something that members on both sides might would deem as non-controversial, if those amendments might come forward first and whoever would like to offer it, I guess. Those are the two that I had as author's amendments. And then, obviously, there will be some spirited discussion on others, I would anticipate, and we'll wait for others to join us at that point.
Senator Ivanov?
Madam Chair, I have the A6.
I don't know if that's been distributed. I want to encourage members, if you have amendments and are fine with distributing them now, please do that. We'll probably save 20 minutes just in interim time. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, the A6 is with regard to the K-12 study abroad reporting requirements, and members might remember that we deleted from the original bill the immunity language, and so I have before you a clause that now says the Department of Education must publish the information it has under paragraph C, it's on page 90, but it is not responsible for any errors or omissions in the information provided to it by a school district or charter school. A school district or charter school is not responsible for omissions in the information provided to it by students and programs.
Any questions for Senator Bonoff on the A6 amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment adopted.
Thank you.
Senator Cossey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A21 amendment.
Senator Cossey, is that distributed?
It is here.
Okay, and I want to make a plea to everyone. If you have an amendment, why not distribute it? I think we kind of know what most of them might be anyway, so let's get them out there if we can. We'll save some time.
The A21, is that what you said, Senator?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And, Madam Chair, if Senator Clausen could start addressing that.
Sure.
Madam Chair and committee, this is found on page 10 after line 29, and it relates to concurrent enrollment. This was a bill that passed through five committee hearings and relates to language of eligibility and funding and reporting requirements, and it was omitted earlier. I'd like to have it placed on the A1.
Okay, we have the amendment now. Page 10, line 20, after line 29, it begins.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions from the members regarding this amendment? If not, all those in favor of the adoption of the A21 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment adopted. Do we have another one here? Looks like.
Members, raise your hand.
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have an amendment. I don't know what number it is, about the teacher preparation program.
Who has A7 amendment? Vicki? Okay. Senator Jensen. Will, I'm just looking forward. Senator Torres Ray, maybe we can call on Senator Jensen. Are you ready to go?
Sure.
On A7?
Yes. Madam Chair.
Okay. Senator Jensen.
The A7 amendment deals with Senate File 811, which was the IT certification section of the omnibus bill. We had a hearing on the bill, and changed the language in the omnibus bill to an RFP process so that everyone's familiar. We had originally indicated a single grant process. Now we've reverted back to the RFP process, so I want members to understand that we did that. But I'm offering the A7 amendment because we did pass this into law earlier and there was some problems with getting it implemented. I would like to add this language that says that the proposal for the RFP should be submitted no later than July 1st, 2015, and that it would be awarded no later than September 1st. And then on 1.5, line 3 of how it's relisted in the omnibus bill, after program, it would say as long as funds are available. And then the last thing is we did put in that it would apply to the 2016-2017 school year. And I just feel if we have money available for both years, if a school is ready and we get the RFP issued and a contract signed by September 1st, if schools are willing to do it in the 2016 spring semester of 2015-16 school year, we should be able to and allow that process to take place during that time frame. It doesn't change the allocation. It doesn't change the appropriation. It just removes the specification that they'd only be able to be in schools in the 2016-17 school year, the way it's written currently.
Are there any questions?
And I'm looking for support
regarding the A7 amendment. If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment A7 adopted. And we do have Senator Torres Ray's amendment, I believe, Senator. A9.
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Members, as you recall, this proposal was presented to you earlier, and we had a series of requirements for information about teacher preparation programs in order to really understand better how teachers are being prepared in Minnesota, and the data that we collect is not enough for us to really do some analysis of what is happening with the programs. I was told, by multiple people that the list that we have was too extensive, it was too complicated. So I talked to multiple groups about perhaps just beginning the process and looking into very key components only, which already exist. So all I'm asking for the institutions to do is just to provide this information in a more transparent way. This information actually is available, is my understanding, but it just needs to be available in a way that just regular people can comprehend and access. So we're just asking for graduation rates. Obviously, we need to know that. We need to know about licensure, who is obtaining licensure. We need to know about employment rates, who's being hired as a result of obtaining that particular training and licensure, and the satisfaction of teachers with the program. So it's a very simple approach. I think that in the eyes of many people who want to do some analysis of these numbers, what they would like to do is really get to understanding why people are pursuing the teaching profession, why people are not pursuing the teaching profession, what are some of the things that we need to understand about the very institutions that provide this particular training, what are some of the obstacles perhaps that we need to address. So that is the amendment, members, and I hope I can get your support.
Are there any questions or comments from members? If not, all those in favor of the adoption of the A9 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Amendment adopted. I have the A18 amendment examining and developing statewide swimming resources. Is that yours, Senator?
Yes.
Torres Ray?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This request came from a House member who has fought really, really hard to really change the way we conduct business about swimming in the with the schools and parks. And the reason she's doing this work is because a lot of the statistics show that really there is an overwhelming majority of African-American children and young children who are really not having the opportunities to swim. As a result, the drowning, statistics are very alarming for children of color. And this is an attempt to put together a group to look at those numbers and figure out if they can submit a recommendation to us.
Any questions or comments, members? If not, all those in favor of adopting A18 signify by saying aye.
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 Amendment adopted.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members.
We have the A32 amendment. It's regarding
Senator Bonner.
Okay. Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Okay.
The
A32.
It's 175,000.
Parent-child.
Page 37, line 3. I haven't
civics education.
Okay. A32?
Page 37 in the bill.
I apologize. I was focused on something.
That's the civics education.
Oh. Okay. Thank you very much. So it confused me because of the numbers. So the A32 amendment adds the civic education to the bill, and this bill was heard in legacy, and we've actually funded it in our budget each year, and apparently it has been included, but we never included this additional $50,000 each year. And so because I was listened to the bill in legacy, I'm taking this opportunity to offer it here. It was inappropriate to put it in the legacy bill. And I believe there's somebody here to testify.
Yep. Well, Madam Chair, if it's necessary, but I believe we already have 100,000 in the base, or
right.
125 in the base.
So it adds an additional 50 each year.
Okay. With that explanation, members, all those in favor of A32, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, amendment adopted. And then we have A15.
And members, as you distributed them, we're just going whatever's in front of us, and we'll take them.
The A15 amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, I thought you wanted non-controversial ones first, because this is controversial.
Yes, Madam Chair, if we could, if we have some others that might be less controversial, that'd be a good thing.
Okay, good.
But we're getting ready.
Okay.
Senator Bonoff, I didn't notice which one it was.
Or I would have put it right under my agenda.
But is there any, Senator Kiffmeyer, you were working on one item that we talked about this morning on the ACT. Is that ready for prime time?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure that it is, but if I can just defer for a little bit.
Okay.
Does anyone have an amendment that you consider to be rather non-controversial?
Great.
Senator Jensen?
I think 825?
No.
It's a amendment. 825, okay. I have that one here.
Yes, and there may be some amendments where if someone is not here but another member wishes to offer it, which happens, we'll do that. So that.
Senator Jensen, A25, you will discuss with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This amendment changes how the American Indian education money is allocated. That's already in the bill. This would provide financial aid to school districts, charter schools, and tribal contract and grant schools. To qualify, schools must have at least 20 American Indian students enrolled. They must receive federal Title VII funding, and they must be operating an American Indian education program. This approach would reach about 78% of the American Indian students in the state and still provide a substantial increase to funding in the BIE schools. And that's what the amendment does.
Are there any questions from the members regarding this A25 amendment? Senator Wicklund?
Madam Chair, Senator Jensen, does it change how the existing money is going to existing districts in non-BIE schools? Or, I guess, can you clarify a little bit more about how it would affect...
Senator Jensen, would you like to comment?
I would, if Bjorn could help with this particular question, I'd appreciate it.
Madam Chair, members, so the effect of the amendment would be to first reduce the amount of equalized revenue going to the four BIE schools. You'll recall in the A11 amendment that was adopted earlier that that equalization cap was removed. Of course, that has a cost. And the effect of the amendment would be to take the amount appropriated for that cap removal and reinstate a cap, though higher than in current law, and take the savings and dedicate it to an American Indian formula aid program that would distribute aid to school districts, charter schools, tribal contract schools, that meet the criteria that Senator Jensen mentioned earlier, enrolling at least 20 American Indian students, receiving federal Title VII funding, and operating an American Indian education program.
Members and Senator Jensen, this was Senator Saxog's amendment. He's been working on this one.
That's correct.
Okay.
Question?
Senator Bonner. No, Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair and Mr. Arneson, what would the net impact then be of the amendment to the BIE schools? With the change in formula, would they then still end up getting less money than the original bill?
Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair and members, yes, is the short answer to that question. You'll recall that in current law, the equalization cap is $1,500. On page 3 of the amendment, page 3, line 29, the cap is now set in the amendment at $2,376. So the BIE schools would, under the A25 amendment, be receiving approximately $875 more than they do under current law per pupil, but not as much as under Senator Wieger's original proposal.
And members, I want to say again that Senator Saxog has been dealing with the BIE schools, so they're aware of it.
And Madam Chair, do they support the amendment? And Senator Wieger, do you support the amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I trusted Senator Saxog's judgment and reaching out, and he's presenting his omnibus bill right
I'm
now in finance. But if you'd like him to come to speak regarding what he had done, I'm basing it on his recommendation.
And members, we could, if we choose to, have a discussion on this matter when Senator Saxog is here at the meeting.
I think it'd be better.
Right now, I would say that we'll take a vote on it. So, Senator Jensen, you move A25?
That's correct.
Okay. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll address this to whomever, staff or the author of the motion. I haven't had a chance to review this and look at this in context. Do we have a definition of an American Indian student?
Mr. Arneson?
Does that exist in statute?
Counsel, do you have an... Counsel is looking up, if you want to wait for a couple of minutes. Senator Nino, would you be willing to wait for an answer to that question? And even if we do adopt the amendment, and there could be discussion later in the meeting?
Well Madam Chair, we can proceed however you see fit, but I'm not particularly comfortable adopting language that has no definition in statute.
I think we'll lay this one over for a bit and try and get the answers to the questions that have been.
That's fine, Madam Chair. I would lay it over and wait for that information to become available to members.
Thank you, Senator Jensen. Okay, so we're ready for another amendment, if anyone has one.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the A5 amendment, and it has been distributed.
Okay, I don't see one yet.
It's being distributed.
Being just, oh, I thought it was. Okay. I'm sorry. There's so much paper in front of me.
We don't want to rush too much. The A5 amendment, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, members, this is a constituent issue that just came up recently. And so... the issue here is that we have a student that, as we know, ACT tests to get into college, to do just about anything, to get grants, you name it, they need to take the ACT test. We have some non-public students that are having concerns and issues with access to testing sites. These are non-public students, and so their concern is for access. MDE has said that they, in their contract, do not have the ability to process payment. And so, in effect, by saying you can't process a payment, you are denying a student's ability and access to actually take the test. No other student in the state of Minnesota has to pay for a computer system to be developed so that they can go take an ACT test. So this is an access issue. It's a right of students issue. And I have put this language forward that leaves flexibility. The system here, implementing a system, can be paper, can be IT, can be a variety, but there should be equal access for all students. They would have to pre-register 45 days so they have notice. They would submit payment for the exam, which is above and beyond what our other high school students are doing when they take the ACT test within their school. They would be notifying, and that they would pay an extra $5 for administrative costs. And so, Mr. Chair, this is the amendment. It is not a mandate on any non-public student to go through this process. If they have other arrangements, they can. But what's important here is that we give equal access to a very, very important test, ACT.
Madam Chair, and
Senator Wigger.
I talked to Senator Kiffmeyer about this about an hour ago, and suggested to ask the department how, you know, the impact for, you know, implementing a system. And I believe Mr. McHenry might be able to give us some impressions if we could get guidance.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner to Department of Education. I do want to thank Senator Kiffmeyer for showing us this amendment just prior to the committee start time, and we have provided some feedback Right now, the way our contract is set up is that the purpose of this were ACTs, they'd be administered in the school setting. And so the contract was set up. We did try to negotiate with ACT as much as possible to provide as much flexibility, but in order to make sure that the student identification number aligns with the actual test taker is something that happens in the school. Recently, we have updated our policy around non-public pupil aid and allowable expenses. So right now, non-public schools are able to access that fund to pay for their assessments. And so we've updated the policy to make sure that that includes the ACT. So right now, the concern we have with this is, number one, we're unable to do this under our contract. Number two, there would be an additional cost for how ACT would administer. They would have to come up with another way to identify the specific student that is not in the specific school that is coming into the school to take the test. And then just to speak a little bit further on this, right now, students, non-public students or homeschool students, they're allowed to sign up and test at any ACT site. They cannot reject a student. So I want to make sure that that's clear, that students are allowed to go to the ACT testing site. So if they went on a Saturday and signed up, they would not be denied. There could be issues where a student, let's say a student was, you know, kicked out of school for disciplinary actions and they had to attend a different school and they went the homeschool route. They would not, there might be reasons why they could not go back into that public school. So I think the issue on this is that there are some specific costs that we are trying to work. We've already asked ACT what those costs may be to administer. I know that Senator Kiffmeyer included an additional $5 charge for administrative costs on the department. We're checking with our IT department as far as how that would impact them. But that would also include an additional $5 charge for taking the test, whereas now the students could just go to a specific testing site, and there is the reimbursement through the non-public pupil aid where they could use that to actually take the ACT.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McHenry, then, just to be clear, the ACT has not discontinued their national testing date sites and those dates in the state of Minnesota. So there still is an option for these students to sign up through the national assessment process and can take the exam.
Senator Claussen, you are correct. Absolutely. There's the specific ACT testing date in public schools. There is one makeup date, but they continue to have all the ACT dates for tests.
Senator Pratt, and then Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McHenry, we're conferring public school diplomas to these non-public students if they wish. Particularly the homeschools I'm thinking of, we provide them textbooks, we provide them the materials that they need. They're following effectively our standards and curriculum. So, how difficult is it for us to assign a student number to these pupils? And if they aren't allowed into school, how difficult is it for us to find a room away from the others? I mean, this to me seems like a discrimination against those who choose not to be in our public schools, that they deserve the same opportunity, the same access that we're providing to public school students. And I find it difficult to understand that our contract is so prohibitive that we can't work around it in such a way that we can provide this to our students at a fairly minimal cost. And so I would speak in favor of this and ask the department to sharpen their pencil a little bit and figure out a way to get this done.
Any other comments?
Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, you know, obviously there is the non-public pupil aid account that is set up to purchase textbooks, pay for tests, including the ACT. So there is a route for students to have access to that. This is an issue, not just a department issue, but it's an issue of us working with our vendor. to make sure that this is something that is able to do. We're obviously always open to continuing working with our vendor, but at this time we don't have the ability to do this without an additional cost.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, I just had a quick follow-up for Mr. McHenry. So is there anything in this amendment that's prohibitive from you using that account?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Senator Pratt, we don't have, number one, the contract does not allow it, and number two, we would need to find out the additional cost and have that appropriated so we could renegotiate with ACT. Right now, we do not know that what that additional cost may be. This was just raised with us right before committee, and so our testing director has already reached out to ACT to see what would be needed in order to accomplish the goal here.
Thank you.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's interesting here is that only this group of students would have to work to get extra money to do this, whereas all the other students, it is just part of the education budget. So why would you put this upon them? I'd like to know why MDE would think that this is okay to make this certain group of students have to go above and beyond when other students do not.
Mr. McHenry.
And Madam Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, I don't think this is something that MDE is trying to do. I mean, there is the non-public pupil aid account, which is to help pay for these services. So it does allow for textbooks. It does allow to pay for testing. And, again, that is a percentage of those tests. But this amendment is for non-public students. And I know that maybe your intent is more for homeschool students. But again, this is something that would be an additional programming cost and that we're trying to determine that with our vendor right now.
Mr. Chair, I just want to be sure we're just clear here. This is not about how to pay for the test, Mr. McHenry. It's not about that. It is about access and flexibility in testing sites. That's what it's about. And it's also about the fact that a contract, there are amendments to contracts. There are options for student ID numbers. Most of these students have driver's license numbers. So the fact that they are maybe available in some limited way to some of these other sites doesn't negate the fact that these are often local folks who live locally in the school district, pay local school property taxes, who are saying, why can't we have the ability to choose a site locally instead of being put into a Saturday or some other specific national testing day? So I would hope that we could maybe work on some of these things, but, Mr. Chairman, I hope we could have the amendment adopted, and then I will do everything I can to work with MDE.
Senator Wigger.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Kiffmeyer. I am open to getting further information, but I wouldn't support the amendment as it is now. And, again, it's brand new. I'd like to get further input regarding, implementation and costs from the department. And, there's several stops for this bill yet. I don't know what the fiscal note might be. We have to keep our budget in balance, et cetera. So I would say to continue to work on it. I think we just reached out just now. To make people aware of it, and Mr. McHenry and others will talk to you and others, and let's see what progress might be made with maybe a recommendation coming back, and so we can vote on it, or you could withdraw with the understanding that that'll be the follow-up.
Mr. Chair, that's what I would like to do. I'll withdraw the A5, and then I'll continue to work with them, but I want to emphasize again, this is a real issue for equal treatment of our taxpaying citizens and locally and all that I've already said. So thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, I'll withdraw the A5.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd ask that the A13 amendment be distributed.
We have it, I believe.
Okay.
I have it anyway. A13?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A13 amendment is just a
slight addition to the alternative facilities appropriation that's being made. I support getting rid of the two-tier system and allowing our local school boards to levy for this, but one of the things that I'm hearing from voters is a concern that they're losing their voice. And so what the 813 amendment does is simply say that the school board should put out the plan and that locals may get a petition of 15% of registered voters and then file that with the board. If they're able to get 15%, then that would require the board to take this to election. If they can't garner 15%, the board continues to have their authority. I think this is just a nice check on the school boards in order to say that for the public to be able to keep their voice in the process and give some sort of assent. I do believe that when the voters authorize our school boards to build a building, they give implicit authority for them to maintain that building. And so I support Senator Dahl's provision in the bill. I think this just keeps one important voice at the table.
Madam Chair?
Senator Wieger, then Senator Dahl.
Yes, we've had discussion on this issue, maybe not as much this session, but in the past, and we've had quite a bit of testimony in opposition from the locally elected school boards. And I think, Senator Pratt, you characterize it as a check on the school board. And I guess, in terms of local control, the people elect that school board, and that plan has to be approved by that school board and ultimately by the department. But, so there is that local control element as well. But, I understand what you're saying about having the check on the district, but we have had testimony of strong opposition from the School Boards Association, from the Association of Metro School Districts, and potentially others.
Senator Dahl, did you?
Madam Chair, and Senator Wieger said it pretty well. I know, Senator Pratt, you are a school board member, and I hope you trust your own judgment in terms of how you run your school district, just like a city council person or a county commissioner. Again, we're not building new buildings or adding wings. We're just, as you mentioned, the need for maintaining those buildings should be left in the hands of the school board, and they need to have the tools to do that. So I also worry about outside groups coming in. We've seen that in other referendums, and even the petitioning process, this can be wrought with, groups that don't even live in the district that are totally anti-levy or tax, and it's a costly endeavor, and I really trust the school boards with this power that we've given the 24 other school districts. So if it's good enough for them, I think it's good enough for the other 300-plus districts around the state.
If there's no other... Senator Klassen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important to note that we've given levy authority to county commissioners, city council, and I think that this is just consistent with that local control by elected officials. So I would not be in support of this amendment.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do trust the judgment of our school board members, but we've also seen in many cases, and I was part of one, where the question put in front of the voters was not what the voters wanted. It wasn't what the community felt was needed. This is a way to make sure that the plan in place isn't parochial, that it is clear, and that I would suspect that in most cases with a fairly high threshold of 15%, so a community of 20,000 registered voters, you'd have to get 3,000 names. All we have to do is look at the number of referendum that go down for some of this stuff to understand that there is a need to have a check on local boards. And I'm not asking for a reverse referendum of any kind. I'm just saying is when the school board puts forth that plan and for that levy, that then the voters have a chance to weigh in. And, Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Senator Nienau, and then we'll go with the roll call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it's important to note we can all talk about voters holding boards to account, et cetera, et cetera. But we are, this does not have a delayed implementation. These board members do not have to face the voters before they impose this new taxing authority. Were there a delayed implementation, the arguments made around the table here in opposition to Senator Pratt's amendment would be more valid. But we are giving new taxing authority to individuals that were not elected with that taxing authority. And I have consistently expressed concerns when we've done that, whether it be for football stadiums or baseball stadiums or school buildings or whatever. I can engage in the discussion about whether we should let school boards do what school boards need to do, but they should be elected with whatever authority they have. They should not be given new taxing authority. Same for county boards. That is concerning to me because it circumvents the voter. The voter did not have their say on whether that person or that collective board will have the ability to tax them. They did not have their say if we give it to them prior to an election. And Senator Pratt is simply trying to slightly mitigate that concern and say, let's add one little potential check in the process in the event that there's a situation where the board is out of line with what the voters want. And I think that's eminently reasonable.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For expediency's sake, I'll withdraw my request for a roll call.
Okay, the roll call has been
unrequested.
Unrequested. Thank you, Senator Pratt. We'll go ahead with the vote then. All those in favor of the Senator Pratt's amendment, A, what was it?
13.
A13. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No.
No.
No. Motion defeated. We have any other amendments? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There should be a couple amendments in my name out there. And then I also want to bring back, I knew you guys had tabled the amendment, the A25 amendment, so I'll take that in the order that is most convenient to the members. So,
Senator Hoffman, you're going to discuss Senator Saksog and Senator Jensen's amendment. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
I'd move that A25 be taken from the table.
Thank you, sir.
Do we have to have a vote on it? No. Okay. We'll take it off the table with the chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's the same amount of money that we've already established within this body. And what it does is there's the current federal Title VII school districts out there, and most of us have Indian Education, and the youth there are self-identified. So, and those are the Johnson O'Malley dollars that come into the district. Both our districts have a pretty good use of that. We have these trunks and education stuff in Anoka Hennepin that's there. So what this does is it spreads it out then also with the BIE schools, but then also spreads it out to, I believe, the 32 school districts that are operating under the federal Title VII funding or the Johnson O'Malley work that's there. So this actually, same amount of money, makes it more accessible to more students that are identified as Native American Indian in Minnesota.
Did you get your question answered regarding the definition of Indian?
Well, Madam Chair, Council, student. I ask Council to make a couple of comments on the record here as to what's in statute.
Council, please.
Madam Chair, members, the A25 amendment is amending language as part of the American Indian Education Act, and within that act there are definitions, and one of the definitions is in 124D.73 subdivision 2, and it's for American Indian child, and it gives that definition, and Another thing to note that the use of American Indian students versus American Indian child, once a child is enrolled in school, they're a student, so that the definition of child, American Indian child, would kind of would go with American Indian student.
Does that answer your question, Senator Nino?
Good program.
There was another question. No, it's been answered. Okay. Any other questions, members, on A25, the American Indian Education Aid? All those in favor of adoption, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? No. Amendment adopted.
B30.
The A30 amendment is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There should be another one, too, up there with my name on it, but I'll start with the A30 amendment. What we're asking here is in discussion of the under our preschool learners piece of Senate File 811, what we've done is we wanted to add some flexibility for school districts rather than looking at the classroom teachers have a licensure issued. We want to go to 2019-2020, which just builds some flexibility, and there was an agreement among those that it would involve both on the preschool side and within school districts. So,
Madam Chair, may I ask Senator Hoffman, did you have a chance to vet this, I believe, could you just, for the record?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and Senator Wigger, I did. Both the SEIU folks and the Ed Minnesota folks that this would deeply involve have both been in contact, and there's an agreement, so there's peace in the valley, so to speak.
Senator Torres-Ray and Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Huffman, I'm concerned. I think the language, did you change the language? It says to ensure that all classroom teachers have a license issued by the board, which is kind of different from what we had in the previous language. And the reason I'm concerned about, I guess I have a question about kind of the transition period and how are we going to ensure that we do have enough teachers and that these teachers are of diverse backgrounds, knowing that we're limiting only to license issued by the board. We have the special permission is gone. The language for special permission is gone from your proposal. Could you explain to me a little bit more?
Senator Hoffman.
Madam Chair and Senator Torres-Ray, right now 96% of our school districts have licensed classroom teachers in their preschool programs. And so as this was moving out, there are the ones that aren't licensed are going to be those that might have a two-year degree, two-year program, or they're working their way up in a career ladder. Using the years 2019 to 2020 should give ample time for somebody who might have a tech college degree or a two-year degree to go ahead and finish their bachelor's and get their license. So I thought 2019-2020 was clearly enough. And again, going back to Madam Chair and Senator Wigger and Senator Torres-Ray, it's really not an issue within our current classrooms right now of licensure except for just a small amount of people. That's it.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hoffman, I beg to differ. I think there is a significant issue in terms of recruiting teachers of diverse backgrounds and teachers who speak the language of a large number of kids who are coming into the system, especially in early childhood.
No.
I think that I would like to ask for a friendly amendment, Senator Hoffman, if you're willing to put in there, have the required license or special permission as it was included in Senate, in Article 9.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Torres-Ray, the special permission, that's going to be granted, I believe, by the Department of Licensing or Department
It's the Board of Teaching.
Board of Teaching. So, Madam Chair, this gets us to, I'm fine with being flexible and getting us to where we need to be, so I accept that friendly amendment and hope I can count on Senator Torres-Ray to help support this amendment.
Would you, Senator Torres-Ferry, would you tell us where you would insert that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it would just read the way it was in terms of ensure that all classroom teachers have a license issued or a special permission issued by the board. That's fine. Yep. I don't have a problem. Of course, the board is qualified to issue that, so I don't have a problem with that. I just would like to insert a special permission.
Okay. You have that? Senator Hoffman, you're accepting that amendment?
Madam Chair, Senator Torres-Ferry, thank you. I accept.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Senator Claussen.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This is just a point of order. Is this a policy issue versus fiscal?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Claussen, ties into the whole section on the readiness and the use of personnel, so it links.
Okay. And Madam Chair, maybe going back to the oral amendment, could we use temporary licenses issued versus, I think that's the correct term that we'd use with the Board of Teaching. In other words, ensure that all classroom teachers have a license issued, a license or temporary license. That's, I think that's the correct term that the Board of Teaching would use in issuing it.
Senator Hoffman and Senator Claussen, staff has pointed out that we have used that special permission in language. Okay. So I would say it would be acceptable. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, all those in favor of adoption of Amendment A30 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Amendment adopted.
Madam Chair, clarification on that motion, the A30 amendment as amended?
He accepted it. So
yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Senator Hoffman.
It's an A26 amendment. Should be in front of you.
It is in front of me.
Thank you.
A26.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, this was a qualifying cooperative program as the joint powers agreement that utilizes technology and other options that increase the availability of the number of curriculum offerings for students. This bill itself is sitting in Senator Tomasoni's omnibus package. We need this language to pass through our division in order for this thing to keep moving forward. But it was already heard and agreed upon, so this should just be a simple amendment. And I do have some folks here that could speak on it if somebody wants to get deep in the weeds for the next 6 hours.
What is the amendment number?
A26, members.
I don't have. Do we have it?
Yeah.
Don't tell me.
I assumed because I haven't.
You and Greg.
Oh, I see it now. Thank you.
Haven't.
Yeah. And Senator Hoffman, you said this is a provision that was carried in Senator Tomasoni's committee. And
yes, Madam Chair and members, this is full to go. We just needed the language on the qualifying cooperative programs and to be added in there so they can keep moving forward. So,
Senator Wieger, do you have comments on this?
Well, Madam Chair, I feel I need to get comment from Dr. Melcher, make sure it's
no money.
Ultimately, on our spreadsheet, we have to account. Ultimately, I want to make sure on fiscal impact.
Dr. Melcher.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Senator Wieger. I've just looked at this amendment and haven't done a lot of research. It does appear that it loosens up on the requirements for a group of school districts to qualify for the aid under Section 123-485. So there could potentially be some cost to this, but I haven't had a lot of time to study this.
Madam Chair and Senator Hoffman, I appreciate your advancing this. I know that we could get some testimony, but it seems like the department needs to further review it. This will go to finance, and there would be that opportunity for further reflection between now and next Wednesday. So I would respectfully ask that it be withdrawn at this point.
Madam Chair,
Senator Hoffman,
and Senator Wieger, if I withdraw this now, are you saying that you would allow by next Wednesday? Because this is moving in another division, and we just needed to get the okay. So if we got the okay that the Department of Ed didn't have any concerns regarding the flexibility that it's creating, would you be amenable to meet with me to get this put back in where we need to be?
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, yes.
Thank you. So I'll withdraw and come back and see you next Wednesday.
Senator Hoffman withdraws his amendment 26. Any other amendments?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
It seems, though, we are moving into controversy, so I'm now going to offer the A-15.
Excuse me. Senator Bob, did you offer the one on Senator Ress for speeding up charter school special ed payments?
Mr. Chair, I was told that that actually got incorporated within the bill so that it didn't need to be offered.
Very good. Okay, we'll move.
The A-15. So, members, there has been a tremendous amount of discussion and work around the comprehensive vision examination issue. And so if I had my desire would be to just delete that sentence from our bill. However, I talked to Senator Johnson. So, Senator Johnson, are you – oh, you're good. You're going to give the gavel since this is your issue. I spoke to Senator Johnson and explained to Senator Johnson the reason why I oppose even the simple statement that Senator Johnson has compromised and put in the bill, which is to ask when a child had a comprehensive vision examination. The reason I oppose that language in the bill is that the process, well, first of all, I don't think it belongs in E-12 bill at all. And it's a policy statement that I don't think belongs in our bill. But assuming that, okay, it is within our jurisdiction, pediatricians currently in their well-child visits screen with regard to vision. And they do an outstanding job identifying which kids should move on and go to a specialist. And when they do that, that child's visit is covered by insurance because the pediatrician has said there's a problem or they need examination. Even asking a parent in a conversation or on a form, when did you have a comprehensive vision examination, can leave a parent thinking, oh, I should do this. Well, but... So Senator Torres Race talking in my ear. I'm not done, Senator Torres Race. I would say that that's up to the – so they may go then and have this exam because they now have this guilt hearing in their mind. You know, they should go do this and then find it's not covered. In addition, we're just creating – we could be creating a whole new body of work for a class of specialists that isn't perhaps medically necessary. And so the amendment, the A-15, says it is important that every child gets checked. And so I have offered to delete the word comprehensive vision exam and insert well-child exam. Because I know that when I raised my kids, I believed it was important every year to take them to the pediatrician for a well-child checkup. And so that is where we're going to find those problems. The school also does vision screening, and they find problems there, too. But really, the pediatricians are outstanding. And I've shared with some of you a story. My nephew was 19, he lives in Oregon, came to spend the summer at my house to be a camp counselor with my son at our temple camp. He had to have a checkup before working at the camp. He didn't do that in Oregon, so I got him to go to my pediatrician. I arranged for him to do that. My pediatrician did their exam and discovered he didn't see out of one eye. So I don't know how that got missed in Oregon, but he, you know, just in that they did such a wonderful job in that well-child visit that they discovered that. And so it became even more clear to me that our pediatricians really do an outstanding job of spotting trouble. And they recommended he go see a specialist, believe me. So I would ask that we delete the comprehensive vision sentence and this amendment inserts well-child exam in keeping with Senator Johnson's commitment to make sure we find out when kids have trouble.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members and Senator Bonhoff, I appreciate your your interest in the well-child examination. I would say if you want to put "and" in there, that would be fine. I'm very, very serious about this, and you know it, and Senator Nenow knows it, and a lot of people that have been listening to the testimony from the people that have come before us probably five or six times in the three terms that I've served in this Senate. There is a need out there. In 2013, the screeners, they're doing a very good job. They're volunteers. They found, according to the Department of Health, there were 3,871 kids that they found in their screening that had problems. Now, you tell me that none of them had any problem before they turned 3 or 5. They probably had it from earlier ages than that. Even infants have eye problems. And therefore, they're limited in their learning and getting ready for kindergarten, for school, for the workforce of tomorrow. We give them books. We try to give them bus rides, and we try to give them as much food as they need in order to be a good student. But yet we're not seeming to dealing with the eyes, which is the most important organ in our bodies for learning in the early ages. And the Affordable Care Act and national news is telling us it's very important for us to look at the eyes of our children. And you tell me, ask your teachers if they have children who are not seeing right, and when they finally discovered it, it's like, oh my gosh, I never knew it. Parents, I have had numerous conversations with people who have come into my office to talk about something else, and I'll mention something about the vision screening bills that we've put forward and discussed. And it never fails. Somebody says, yeah, I know what you mean. I didn't know I couldn't see. Former Representative Peg Larson, who came forward to me and told me that she didn't know that she had eye problems until she took her driver's test. Now, do you suppose that happened just when she turned 16? No, she told me she had to sit in the back of the room because the nuns, this was at a Catholic school, I don't want to treat our public schools that way. I would hope that would never happen in our public schools. But it happened to her. She had vision problems. I had vision problems. My little great-granddaughter, who's 6 years old, Titi, she's so smart, and she's so aggressive and assertive. I know she wants to be the best one in her little kindergarten class. And she had screenings. But you know what? She was coming home from kindergarten and having headaches. And her mom, who's a single mom, said, you know, I only have one chance to get an eye screening for Kiki, so I wanted to be sure that it was her eyes that were bothering her before I would take her in. And she finally said she had to do it. She took her in, the doctor, the optometrist or ophthalmologist, I don't know who it was, but she took it to a doctor, and the doctor had probably had those little vision screening, the automatic things that they have now, and said immediately they knew she needed glasses. Now she's walking around with little pink glasses. She thinks she's really cute and all that, but I'll tell you what, it could have kept her back reaching a reading level at third grade. That's what's happening to so many of our kids. Ask my good friend now, Dana Thurman. Dana Thurman, because Dana is a special ed teacher in the Centennial School District. She sees so many of her special ed kids that have vision problems. They probably have other special needs, too. But can you imagine someone who has special needs then additionally doesn't see right, sees double? We can talk to some people right here in this Capitol that have experienced that same thing. All we want to do is ask the screeners to say, have you ever had a comprehensive eye exam, if any? And if they say yes, then we ask them for a date. They ask them for a date. And we have that record. We will find out how many people are now getting comprehensive eye exams by their pediatrician or an optometrist or an ophthalmologist, but please, members, I ask you to keep this in there. It's a way to begin looking at vision.
Senator Jensen, followed by Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to share that I'm in support of leaving comprehensive vision examination so we can get an idea of what's happening. My niece had this exact same thing. She seemed very active, all the things, and went to the screening and found out that she has a birth defect in one eye and was blind in one eye. But she had gone through all the wellness checks and all of that stuff right here in Minnesota and was never diagnosed until she had the screening. So as a parent and as an aunt of a child I'm very close to, I never suspected anything. And when you realize that that's happening to somebody and they're too small to tell you that something's wrong because they don't know something's wrong, I think this is just a small step, something that we can do because some parents don't go to the well child visits. So I'm in support of keeping the language the way that it is in the bill.
Thank you. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also would like to make sure that we leave the language the way it is. I have been surprised by this conversation, Senator Johnson, and I am very appreciative of you bringing this to our attention. There are just so many immigrant parents and low-income parents who really do not go through the process the way we describe here. Sometimes we don't have connection with these families, and we believe that because we have health insurance and because we take our children, you know, to the checkups and all of that, and we have a doctor, we have healthcare access. We do all of these things, but a lot of families do not. They don't have the access that we do. So I think it is important that we do this, and this is a minimal thing that we can do, and I think Senator Johnson has worked hard to, you know, do the minimal, and I think at least we should do that. You really have watered down your approach, and I think it's important that we at least keep what we have, preserve what we have in front of us.
Thank you. We have Senator Pratt and Nino, and I think we've maybe ready to vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Senator Bonoff, but I don't want to necessarily argue the merits of whether it's a good provision or not. What we heard yesterday was that there's no cost to it. This is basically a policy provision, and from what I've heard is inappropriate for this bill. Now, I don't have an amendment to take it out, but if we're going to be consistent, it really shouldn't be part of this finance bill.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Pratt very well may have a good point. I don't want to get into whether it should be in this bill or not. Fact of the matter, it's in the bill. As to the arguments why the language on its merits, not whether or not it belongs in this bill, but on the merits, when this bill was originally when the original bill, the full bill, was first put in front of me, I had similar concerns to what Senator Bonoff was talking about. Are we going to start sending parents and children off to doctor exams that they don't necessarily need to go to and spend money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? The reality is, and I don't want to get into all the politics of the ACA and Obamacare, but the reality is that is the law now. And everyone is required to have insurance, and that insurance is required to cover an annual eye exam. And it's a good idea to do that for your children. If they develop problems in their vision, they're going to develop problems in their education. That's a simple reality. I guess you won't hear me say this too much. I'll join arms hand in hand with Senator Johnson and say I agree with her.
All right, members, we're ready to vote on the A15 amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Nay.
Amendment does not, motion does not carry. Next amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, again, would yield for amendments for any authors?
Senator Nino?
I don't know if it's been distributed or not, but I have the A-29. I don't know if that's out.
Okay. A-29.
I don't believe it's been distributed, and a reminder, if if you plan on offering it and would like to share it, that'll help move it along. So the 829, is there anyone that's ready right now with an amendment at the table?
Chair Johnson.
Senator Wicklund. Okay.
I don't have it at the table, but I would ask that the A2 be distributed.
Yes.
So that when we get past the 829, we can...
We're getting A29 now, and whose amendment is this? Yeah. Senator Nino?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just found the number not too long ago. It was getting drafted. So, before going into detail, basically this is a scaled-down version of the budget bill that I introduced, Senate File 1173. This does several things, probably the most significant, or at least I think the most significant. It takes the money that's in this bill for the pre-K. Instead of mandating and targeting it there, we take that and put that onto the formula in the second year. So we double the formula in the second year. In addition, it includes what we call the lockbox. The school boards is an option. School boards can set aside money for priority options, priority concerns, put that money over there, and it cannot be used for other means. It also creates a two-year window where school boards, if this legislature decides to create additional mandates, school boards can say for that two-year window, it's a temporary kind of a trial. School boards can say this doesn't work for us, and they can file a notice with the commissioner and say we're going to opt out of that mandate for this two-year period. Those are the three primary things that are in this amendment. Like I said, it's basically a scaled-down version of the piece of legislation that I introduced. I think it makes sense. If you're looking at the pre-K, quite honestly, I mean, the governor's not a fan of what the legislature is doing with pre-K. We're not going to do anything that the governor likes with the language that we have in this bill. Let's give the money to the schools, and if this funding is sufficient for early childhood, then let the schools choose. Is that what they're going to do with it? Or are they going to prioritize smaller class sizes? Are they going to prioritize reducing the achievement gap? Are they going to prioritize higher salaries to keep qualified staff? What are their priorities? Instead of us saying, here's what your priority will be for this money. I think that's a better approach. I think this extends. We had some conversation earlier about local control. I think this pushes that back down to local school boards, letting them control how they operate their school district, their facilities, how they handle their budget. I think it's a better approach.
Any questions or comments, members?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Nino. Some thoughtful recommendations, a different perspective. I think I do oppose it. I believe the bill that we have presented provides a better mix, but respect your point of view.
All those, and Senator Nino.
Just a final comment then. We've had a number of budget bills that has passed out of the legislature the last couple of budget sessions, and we've had a tendency to tag money to specific funding categories. And we're hearing over and over and over and over again from school districts, we need money on the formula. My original bill, and this is where I kind of scaled it down, my original bill took the money off the formula, created a new category, that a dollar was a dollar, a child was a child. We didn't go there with this. We just put it onto the formula. We're hearing that over and over and over and over again. I hear it from the school districts that I represent. Let us decide how we're going to spend our money. Don't give us new mandates. Even if you fund them, it doesn't help. Give us the funding that we need. Give us the ability to raise the money we need, whatever the question might be. We're not doing that. And Commissioner Casellius sat in front of this committee the other day and said it's not enough. Ironically, when you look at the governor's proposal. Madam Chair, I will ask for a roll call vote.
The roll call has been requested. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nenow, interesting, you know, when the commissioner was talking to us about there already is reserves in school districts, the unrestricted and restricted accounts, and there's some of the districts, I think, had a balance of 35%, so there was a concern. I'm not seeing in here where you would you still allow, because I'm going to go back to put my old school, not 16 years like the other person, but, you know, 8 years, and typically you'd want to stay within the 5-7%. We get down to 3%, we're starting to knock on the doors of statutory not goodness. And so it's like strategery, you know, it's the but in the reserve account, if you have some districts at 35%, what's to say I wouldn't, because I'm not seeing any language in here. I mean, I like your idea of doing this, but there's a but clause in there. There isn't any language that would prohibit them from, like, all of a sudden it goes to 50% or 60%. When do we start having some teeth in the game on this? And I think we bring this back another time and really work toward our other goals of getting, you know, this good Senate file 811 out on the board. But I guess as a question to you, where's the restriction on building the reserves?
Senator Nenow.
Madam Chair, the reserve account isn't specific to cash reserves. This is a new category for specific prioritized spending. So if a school district said, we have a huge facilities problem, they could put money into the reserve account earmarked for facilities only. If a school district said, we have been prioritizing for 10 years trying to get our class sizes down, but we, for whatever reason, haven't been able to do it, they could put the money into a reserve account targeted to that end. If a school district has said, we're losing qualified staff because of our pay structure, they could put money into a reserve account that says, this is targeted for compensation. It's a little bit different than what we think of as the typical cash reserve.
Thank you.
Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like Senator Nenow's proposal. What it does is it addresses what we heard yesterday. To the dozens of testifiers that came up and said, we need more money on the formula. This does it. This gives an extra percent onto the formula, still leaves some additional money into school readiness, and doesn't commit us into the future in the next biennium like the current proposal does, and eat away at future formula increases. Senator Hoffman is right. School districts can reserve this. School districts can take this money, and Minneapolis, if you decide that this is kindergarten or pre-K is what you need, you can set it up. And you don't have to set it up with 550 hours. You can set it up the way you want it set up. It's your choice. And that's what we've heard from all of the education advocates that were at the table. And I think this does it. We should be... Senator Hoffman's right. Commissioner and Senator Nenow. Commissioner Casilius has basically said we've underfunded basic education for over a decade, and here we are starting a new program at the expense of that basic education.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think to follow up, when we were dealing with Senator Pratt's amendment allowing a percentage of the voters to bring the issue back and up for a referendum vote, the argument against that amendment was, well, we need to trust our school boards. And I think maybe we need to carry that all the way through and provide them money and let them determine what their school district needs. And the Nenow Amendment is one of the ways that we actually accomplish that, and I encourage you to vote for it.
With that, we will have the staff take the roll.
Senator Wieger?
No.
Senator Bonoff?
No.
Senator Chamberlain? Senator Claussen?
No.
Senator Dahl?
No.
Senator Dames?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Housley?
Yes.
Senator Jensen?
No.
Senator Johnson?
No.
Senator Kent?
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
Senator Nino?
Yes.
Senator Peterson?
Yes.
Senator Pratt?
Yes.
Senator Saxhog? Senator Stump?
No.
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 Excuse me.
Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Weber?
Yes.
Senator Wicklund?
No.
More money in the formula, but they take some other programs out.
Seven in favor, 11 against, the motion fails.
Senator Peterson.
Madam Chair, I have the A28 amendment.
A28.
And that amendment has been distributed to the members.
Okay, here it is.
Members, if you look at the amendment, the district may use the aid generated under the section with regard to school readiness. For either the school readiness program or to maintain current student-teacher ratios within the districts. I don't need to reiterate a lot of the points that have been made and that were made over and over and over and over and over again yesterday by the people who run our schools, by Lemoyne Corgard, the president of Anoka Hennepin Union, who talked about a 10% reduction in the teacher force in Anoka Hennepin School District. Hundreds of teachers, a 10% reduction. Think about that. This amendment maintains the program in statute and allows districts to abide by the language that exists within the statute as you put it forward, but also allows the district to say, we're not going to rob from Peter to pay Paul. We're not going to simultaneously lay off hundreds of teachers while we're funneling new money into another program. This allows the districts to do it by a majority vote of the school board. And I think it's an amendment that if the target is what the target is, it's an amendment that seeks to find some balance between the interests that we heard yesterday before the committee. Just to shed some light on the situation in my district, in our district, I should say, Anoka Hennepin, the second largest school district in the state of Minnesota, approximately 37,000 students. The Senate bill, as it currently exists, is actually worse than the House bill for my district. For the biennium, my district will receive about $600,000 less under the Senate bill than the House bill. And the reason that's so, unfortunately, in spite of the great testimony that we heard from both Anoka Hennepin and Robbinsdale school districts with regard to Senator Hoffman's bill, as the chair of the committee has decided once again to make drastic reductions in the compensatory pilot grant program, which has all but wiped out any small increase that this bill provides to the districts by way of the 1% formula increase. Quite frankly, we heard from Mr. Corgard refer to Chair Heideman of Anoka Hennepin District, quote, 10% if there was a 1% funding increase. It may be worse than that because the compensatory pilot grant program is also being taken down. We don't really know. This is a very meat and potatoes amendment for my district, and I suspect, as we heard from Superintendent Behrens of Rosemount, Apple Valley, Eagan as well, this is an amendment that they really need. If the target is the target, and that's what we're moving forward, and Mr. Chair, I respect that you have to live within the confines of the target you are given. This gives districts the ability to be empowered to make the decisions that are best for their students, and I'd ask for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Senator Bono.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support this amendment because I, too, have shared that my districts are still having trouble with space after all-day kindergarten, and so they are not able to take advantage of the additional pre-K program. And so I think this flexibility preserves the intent to give districts the resources for expanding pre-K as they desire, but also the flexibility to do what they think is best for their districts. And so while I would have preferred more money on the formula, at least this allows school districts that flexibility and lives within the target.
Senator Peterson, did you have your hand? No.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, and yeah, I appreciate Senator Peterson's support for school readiness. I understand about the frustration that we would hopefully provide additional money and formula. It's my hope that we do. I don't support the amendment because the readiness, the school readiness dollars where we have some $70 million would undermine the legislative intent of making it available. I understand that a school board could decide. I guess you could decide that then for any program that we have. Why not let them vote by majority as to whether they want to do this or that? And there may be some that would say that would be a good thing. But we put in different expectations, and the program that we have for readiness puts a great message, a great Ready for K program in effect that I think school boards can decide if they want to participate in. And the again, the hope is that we're going to get additional money on the formula.
Mr. Senator Wieger, I'd like to make a comment because this is going to be a very difficult vote for me. But and I'm trying to recall the quote that Senator Saxhog gave me, and it was something like, maybe things aren't all right right now, but this is not the end. And I would hope that we can restore some of that funding, Senator Hoffman and Senator Peterson. But I believe that it's in the best interest of all of us to try to keep the bill together the way it was that we developed it. And so I will say that I will be voting against it.
Madam Chair? Mr. Chair,
Senator
who's chairing
Peterson.
The committee?
Pardon me?
Senator, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, with regard to Senator Wieger's comments about legislative intent, I would argue that that's what we do here. That's the legislative intent is what we decide it is, and this committee can decide what our intent is. So it's not set in stone. It is what we say it is. With regard to whether individuals could do this on every issue, that's an academic sort of philosophical conversation. This is an amendment offered within the context of an actual proposal that you're making. And with that in mind, you're proposing something that has actual consequences for the districts, for every district, including mine. And those consequences are significant, as you heard yesterday from the testimony. Those consequences will be such that thousands of teachers, if this were to be enacted into law, will be laid off. 250 approximately just in my district, which only represents 5% of the student population in the state of Minnesota. To suggest that somehow we should just accept a flawed bill because there's more time left in the session doesn't make any sense. We're asked today to vote on this bill. And so as much as it's true that you could make a change later in session, you could also remove this provision later in session if there was more funding available. But today, this is the context in which we're having this conversation. If that changes down the road, then changes can be made and this can be removed. But to expect members to vote, consciously vote for a bill that frankly provides, not in inflationary terms, in nominal real dollar terms, nothing additional to my district, I don't know how you could expect anybody to vote for that. And like I said, with a target that is less than half of your target, the House bill actually funds my district to a greater extent. A small but greater extent. That's a problem. And this amendment deals with that. If we get more money on the formula later, Senator Johnson and Senator Wieger, then remove this. And I think there'd be a lot of merit behind that reasoning. But today we're asked to make the decision with this target and with this bill. And so I would ask the members for a yes vote. Thanks.
Senator Nienow, and then we'll have a roll call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Wieger, if I misunderstood, I certainly am willing to stand and be corrected. But I heard you say that the hope is to get more money on the formula. With all respect, you're the chair.
Yes.
This is your bill. It's not there. And you all just voted against it. So what hope does that give anybody?
Are we ready for the vote, staff?
Senator Wieger?
No.
Senator Bonoff?
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain? Senator Claussen?
Yes.
Senator Dahl?
No.
Senator Daines?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Housley?
Yes.
Senator Jensen? Senator Johnson?
No.
Senator Kent?
No.
Senator Kiffmeyer?
Yes.
Senator Nienow?
Yes.
Senator Peterson?
Yes.
Senator Pratt?
Yes.
Senator Saxon?
No.
Senator Stump? Senator Torres Ray?
No.
Senator Weber?
Yes.
Senator Wicklund?
No.
There is something that's disturbing your microphones. Nine in favor, 10 against, the motion fails. Senator Peterson.
So we wait until the disturbance is over?
We're under construction.
Okay. Lightning. Senator Peterson.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A-22 amendment.
The A-22 amendment.
I think it's been distributed. Maybe not.
22 or 28?
22?
Is it to
22? 22, A-22? No? You can feel free to take Senator Wicklund's amendment. We can get to 22.
Senator Wicklund offers your amendment. Senator Wicklund offers your amendment.
Senator Wicklund, and you're in I'm trying to get someone to fix that. What number was your...
It's the A2, Madam Chair.
A2.
And it's been distributed?
Yes, it is.
And, Madam Chair, I bring this forward. I had some concerns this session in our ability to make much progress in the area of testing reduction. And this is a small, request to ask the Department of Education to do some research. I had asked at our hearing in February whether the MAP test that's used by, I believe, approximately 70% of the school districts today in their testing regimen, if that could be a replacement for the MCA, current MCA test. And what I heard was that wasn't sure whether we could do that or not unless further research was done on whether the test aligned to state standards and whether it would meet the federal accountability requirements. And so this amendment would request that the department research those issues and come back with a report with recommendations to the committee in January of 2016. Commit us to doing anything moving forward, but it does give us more information so that we can make a better educated decision about whether we could reduce the number of tests. I believe if this were possible, schools might be able to reduce the testing done, especially in elementary grades, by one test. If they can use the map, that would satisfy both state requirements and their own requirements for a test that includes growth and adaptability that isn't included in the current MCAs. So I bring this forward, and I ask for your support.
Thank you, Senator Wicklund. Senator Wicklund?
Madam Chair, Mr. Wilms was going to add, I don't know if we have to add language to the amendment or just comment on the funding
Mr. Wilms.
Mechanism for the study.
Regarding the finance.
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, if you're inclined to provide funding for this, this could be addressed within rider language on the agency budget, and it could be done so by indicating and stating into the record the amount, and then staff can work to implement that language.
Madam Chair,
Senator Wicklund.
I would request that the rider language include $20,000 for the department to perform the study.
And you're adding that to this amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And staff, you can get that folded in, okay? Correct? Or Mr. Wilms?
Madam Chair and Senator Wicklund, and I forgot to mention that we should note that it would be for 1 year only.
Madam Chair, I request that the wording also include that the funding would be for 1 year only.
Madam Chair, may I ask staff, may I assume this keeps us within our target?
Mr. Wilms.
Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, yes, the bill as amended is currently under target, and this would not put it over target.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Senator Pratt and Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a good amendment. I serve on a committee with a chair who will often look at a proposal like this and say, the department's got 1,000 people working for it. They can find the time and the effort and the money to get something like this done without having to add thousands of dollars every time. And here we are. It seems like every idea we have comes with a price tag from one of the largest agencies we have in the state. And so I appreciate Senator Wicklund's request, but our Department of Education should be able to squeeze this out of what they have. And every idea, every request that's coming from this legislature should not have people and dollars associated with it. So I oppose the $20,000 appropriation.
Mr. McHenry, I see you're – we'll get to your question next, Senator Clausen. Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, members, again, Kevin McHenry, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Education. I just wanted to raise two issues. Normally the process, when we go through to make sure that the tests align to state standards, the process is we have an RFP, and we enter into a contract with the vendor, and then that's when we enter into the alignment piece. So there is a cost to that, and I appreciate Senator Wicklund raising that. The time frame that we would need to work with MAP, it may take longer than that January 15th deadline. And at the same time, this isn't just the department doing the alignment. We would need MAP to actually agree to do this. And Ms. Doslin is here to talk about that aspect of how we could work together to move forward on this. The one thing I do want to raise as far as absorbing costs from the department, I just want to remind you all that that the state education budget, we don't have 1,000 employees. I think we have about 400. I think it's 398. And our federal funding of the department is about 60%. And under that 60%, we do have specific requirements of how we do our work and report to the federal government. For the work that we do, we have to be accountable to that. So, a lot of times when we're raising issues of this may have a cost to it, we have employees that have to do specific work for specific projects. We try to maneuver as much as possible, but that is something that we have to be cognizant of. And so, when we're asking our staff to do more, especially if we're asking our assessment staff, where there is federal funds coming through there, we need to make sure we have enough time to actually do the work too.
Senator Clausen.
I'll defer for our testimony from.
Okay. Ms. Dozlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozlund. I represent the Northwest Evaluation Association, which is the national nonprofit assessment organization that does provide the measure of academic progress here in Minnesota. And it's wonderful to know that so many school districts and legislators like the work that NWA does with its partner school districts. I would have certainly, with all due respect to Senator Wicklund, would have liked to have been had the opportunity to see this amendment ahead of time and get some feedback from NWA. But I just think we would share some of the same questions that the department has raised, especially in regards to the timeline of how long this process would take, and just on our end, certainly what it would take for NWA to be part of this study. Thank you.
Senator Claussen?
Yep, thank you. Just a question for the department. I think one of the concerns in the past has been with the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments that it really lacks showing individual student growth. I know that they've made a lot of changes, and I know the MAP test, that's one of the primary reasons why school districts were using it, because it did show that individual student growth over time. Maybe Mr. McHenry could comment on changes that have been made to the MCAs in that regard.
Mr. McHenry.
Sure, Madam Chair, Senator Claussen, I appreciate the question. Through the legislation that was passed in 2013, we have been building into our test better predictability. We've been building in better reporting, so we're able to report quicker. We're able to report predictability of how a student may perform on a college entrance exam. There is a difference. So the tests have been improving, and the reporting has been improving, and it has come in significant ways from where they used to be. I do want to say there is a difference as far as when you're having a test for accountability and when you don't have a test for accountability. Obviously, there might be some more stress with the MCAs. We don't have anything, you know, I want to be clear that we don't have anything negative to say about the NWA exam. We know districts have been using that in conjunction with the MCAs to provide as much information on how students are performing. And districts do use both those tests in different manners when they make a judgment of how a student is progressing. So there's ways that they do work together, but I will say that the construction of our tests, the information that's provided, the linkages to the data that the students and the teachers need, that all has been improving, so the reporting has been improving as well.
Thank you.
With that, members, I would ask all those in favor of adoption of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Senator Peterson's.
Senator Peterson?
A22.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the A22 amendment is speaking to one of the issues that I just talked about in my last amendment. For the districts that participate within the compensatory pilot grant program, if you didn't already know, you should know that in the second year of the biennium, that program is cut by about 66%, I believe, to the detriment of those participating districts, the members on the committee, South Washington School District, Robbinsdale School District, and to the greatest extent, Anoka-Hennepin School District. Members, if you'll recall, 2 years ago, this committee sat around a table just like this, and we had a very similar conversation actually going on, and the chairman at that time had also decided that this program was something that he was not going to continue for the participating districts, and the members of this committee decided that in fact it was a priority and that in fact we thought that it should continue. And the members have voted accordingly. I believe that amendment got 11 votes in this committee. I think all the same members are here today. The issue is very similar. In fact, you could you might say it's worse. In particular, it's worse for Anoka-Hennepin today than it was. As I pointed out, Anoka-Hennepin receives virtually no increase in this bill from the prior biennium. I've already went over sort of the consequences of doing so. Apparently, We're supposed to be happy, though, because we're getting $2.6 million for school readiness while simultaneously laying off hundreds of teachers in the district. This would help at least just continue the program, which, as I articulated before and in the committee hearing that we had with Senator Hoffman, is not new money, and we sort of had talked about and joked about at that time the frustration that we always have to come back here and, you know, come crawling back to the committee and fight and scratch to sort of just continue this program. And actually at the time I thought, well, geez, this is going well. You know, 2 years ago we sort of expressed the will of the committee. There's no way that the chairman's not going to include this program again. Why would he? You know, I mean, he got rolled. The committee decided against his opinion. Let's just move forward, and we don't have to have this battle again, but here we are. Just to let you know, members, so the compensatory grant cut, the equivalent of that cut in Anoka Hennepin in the second year of the biennium, is $87 per pupil. That's $87, an $87 reduction in a $59 addition on the formula. It's a net negative of negative $28 per pupil. In Robbinsdale School District, your 1% formula increase that you're supposed to be thankful for, so much so that you are going to spend half of the money on school readiness, your increase actually drops from $59 to $32 per pupil. So if the 1% was bad for the teachers in your district, it's even worse than that. And South Washington is the same. I'm not sure exactly what the number is there, but their program was cut, again, to the tune of 66% approximately. Mr. Chairman, I'm sure you'll be quick to point out that this bill, this amendment does not balance within the omnibus bill. And it didn't balance 2 years ago when we offered it either. I would suggest to you, however, that if the bill is amended again for the successive bienniums, that it should be fairly clear that the members of this committee have placed a very specific value on the program, and that maybe we don't have to keep doing this over and over again, and that you can find it within your target. Now, if you're going to suggest that that's the reason why you oppose the amendment, I'd be happy to amend this amendment in committee today and find the money within your bill. I suspect it won't change your position on the issue, however. With that said, I'd ask for a roll call on the A22 amendment.
Roll call has been requested.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Wigert.
And thank you, Senator Peterson. And actually, you responded to each of the points I was going to make, so I oppose the amendment. Thank you.
Comment.
Oh,
so Mr. Chair, in principle, I do support the Peterson amendment. I'm going to vote no, even though I, on the record, strongly agree with it, because as a division chair, I do believe we cannot go outside our targets. Unless we have a way to pay for that, I can't support it.
Mr. Chair, Madam
Senator
Chair.
Peterson.
I would like to amend the amendment then. If staff could help me redirect the subsequent funds from the school readiness appropriation to make up for the difference so that it balances within the bill.
Senator Hoffman.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All my years of being on the school board, not 16, but 8, that's half. So the conversation always came up, and this body and the other body put together these pilot projects. You knew, and we know, the fix on this is well over north of $175 million because a poor kid's a poor kid's a poor kid. And the data that we've shown in the 7 school districts that have been part of this compensatory education pilot closed that achievement gap so much. And I'm constantly coming back here. I thought it would be, and thank you, Senator Peterson, for bringing it back up, that this is what we went into education to do. We need to really have a thorough look at a compensatory education pilot. And so I'm going to be in support of both that and the fact of the amendment, because I'm tired of doing the leveraging, robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I really would hope that this gets us to look at the data-driven effects. And this truly is a data-driven effect to have the to close that achievement gap. The best in the state, based on what we know works, came 2 years ago with this much data and thought this would be just a no-brainer. So I will support both that amendment and what you try to do on the other one, because this is just a leveraging issue nightmare, and I think we need to keep going forward. So thank you.
Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did receive some very compelling testimony from the Anoka School District, and they certainly have been successful in that pilot along with the other districts. We all know that we've had to make some very difficult decisions, and a lot of our bills that would support student learning have been cut back or maybe not included in our bill that we're reviewing today. You have to also look at that $7.325 million that you take out. Where are the students that might be assisting? So how do you balance this? I guess the problem is if we had additional funding, this wouldn't be a problem. But because we do have a problem with this, I would not be supporting this. And it is a difficult decision, however. But I think you have to look at where that money would be going and the students that would not be helped versus the student that is helping. So it's one of those difficult decisions. But I would not be supporting this. In deference to my good friend Senator Hoffman.
Just to that point, I just want to make clear that, Madam Chair, that the amount isn't $7.325 million. That's the total amount of the program in the years. In the bill already, the first year is already maintained at that amount. The second year, it's a difference. It's a 66% reduction of the 7.325. So it's actually 66% of 7.325 for 1 year. For the record. Yep.
Thank you, Senator Peterson.
4.9 million, I believe, yeah. Ish. 5 million.
Senator Peterson, Mr. Arneson.
Madam Chair and members, so just to be sure that we're sort of reading the intent of Senator Peterson's amendment to his amendment into the record, the effect of his oral amendment would be to remove $5 million from the school readiness appropriation for fiscal year 17, and then the base for fiscal year 18 would be set at that adjusted level.
Correct.
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, you know, the more discussions we have and the longer they go on, I think this just points to the issue that I have tried to make a number of times in committee meetings, and that is, and in particular with the case of the pre-K, we are committing a substantial amount of money to a new program when we are not adequately taking care of that which we already have. And in visiting with my superintendents, they said, you know, we like the pre-K, but the reality of it is, and we already are out there trying to identify the special needs students, which we have proven data that this is of great benefit to them. But as it relates to the rest of them, when you stop and consider that the pre-K programs, the generally positive effect has generally been evened out by the time to get to third grade, how can we justify spending that kind of money for a program when we're failing to handle the basic needs of our existing programs? I have always found this an amazement to me, and this is being my third year here, that we continually do that. And there are great things to try and start, have pilot programs, and I'm all in favor of those kind of things. But now, right now, we're talking about roughly a $70 million program we're initiating when we're creating this kind of problems in the existing situation. We all tend to, and then here we go, we follow the path, and we just continue on, and it just sometimes utterly amazes me and disappoints me.
Senator Wicker.
Madam Chair, we're going to recess till 4 p.m.